Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook. I'm Paula Schiller, just back from this year's AFN convention. It seemed more like a family reunion of land claims veterans than the cutting edge of a movement, for it's no secret that the AFN is in a period of transition. It's low on programs and purpose these days. Yet in his keynote address, AFN's founder, Willie Hensley, told the convention to use this time for reflection. He said it's time to look inward, time to reaffirm tribe, spirit, and strength. Those words of the 1980 convention slogan recur in the following excerpt from Hensley's opening address.
This is the 14th annual convention of the Alaska Federation of Natives. I would like to know who was here in 1966. Those of you who might have been here in Anchorage, could you please stand? Now that you see who they are, they're responsible for all the problems we've had the last several years. If you have a gripe or a complaint about this section or that section of that act or that problem, now you can go to them and tell them about it. Actually, I would like to thank the Tyonic Indian people. Some of you who are new or are too young may not remember that it was that group who really was financially responsible for most of us being able to get to Anchorage in October of 1966, when we first met. And I would like to hear a little applause for them because they stuck their necks out. Also, there's one person in particular that I think we owe a great deal to, and I would like to thank both the organization and the organization that he headed. At that time, the Cook Inlet Native Association was the host for the AFN convention, the first one, and the person who headed it at that time and who had the nerve to get up and take the leadership was Emil Noddy. Where are you, Emil? Wherever he is. Some of you do not, I think, understand that it took a little bit of guts in those days to try to say what we knew all along. That is that we own the land. So we've come a long way since 1966, but as I view the situation, there has been a great deal of confusion as to what's happened to us. We were able to make significant advances because we put aside our historical and cultural differences and we were able to move together in unity. And although we've had a major influence on Alaska, on how it is now and how it's going to be in the future, there's a great deal of confusion as to what we have created. And I think there are many people, many of our own people, who do not understand why we fought so hard for the land. Basically, We did not fight for the land because it represented capital, that it represented money, or that it represented business. We fought for the land because it represents the spirit of our people. It represents your tribes, and it represents your ancestors, and it represents that intimate knowledge of that land that your people grew up on for 10,000 years. And when we fought for that land, we really were fighting for survival, not economic survival or political survival. We're talking about survival as a people, with an identity, with a culture. And I think many people don't understand the massive changes that the people have been through, that you people have been through in the last 100 years or 200 years, depending on where you're from. I think many people forget about the Aleuts and how they barely survived the Russian invasion, the change brought about by the whalers and all their liquor, the gold rush, the war, and the vast populations that came following the highway and the construction of the railroad. At the same time, of course, there's been a great pressure to conform, to look the same, to speak the same, and to think the same as others in America. The fact is, Alaska's native people, just as the Indian people, have fought the same tide of assimilation, acculturation, individualizing, and atomizing. And this process has taken its toll on our spirit and our identity, on our language, and on our culture. And the symptoms of that we live with every day. We have alcoholism and drugs and dropouts, family breakup, and crime in our communities. And because of these pressures that we have had on us, we have almost lost the willpower to reassert our tribal identity and reconstitute our languages, which is the expression of our spirit, of who we are inside. We need to rebuild our societies. When we fought for the land, we did not fight just for the land. We fought for it because it is the spirit of our people. It represents our identity. It is the home of the spirits of our ancestors. The land which represents our spiritual homeland now rests in a corporation, a soulless entity that is designed for commercial purposes. As you know, this was not a usual settlement. Among the Indians, they had a tribe, a tribal government that was responsible for the survival of the people, of their language, and of their culture, and only incidentally were involved in business. Unfortunately, our identity as a people, our tribal soul, has an uneasy resting place. That land If we think that our corporations exist just for corporate purposes, then we have a problem. I believe that the starting point for dealing with the future has to be a look inward. I don't think the main problems that we have are out there anymore. You know, it's not government. You know, it's not some threat out there. To me, the real threat for our future survival is inside all of us, individuals and tribes. We cannot look to corporate life or politics to fill the void of a century of psychological repression. Business and politics is not an end. It is a means to the primary task of tribal survival. Our people have been misled to believe that to be an Inupiat or an Indian, or an Aleut, is incompatible with successful survival in a modern world. And that is a fallacy. There is nothing to prevent you from being the best native person or the best linguist and still be a great Alaskan. Despite all the problems of the past and of the present, we have all the elements of successful survival in the future. We still have some land, not all the land we started out with. We have capital, which is essential in America. And we have some fairly experienced politicians and are developing some experienced managers that we need. But in my opinion, we have to develop a dynamic program for each of our own areas that is going to involve, number one, the resurrection of the spirit and of our language and of our culture. It has to involve education and the creation of an educational system that is not as destructive to the spirit and identity of our children. It has to involve economics and corporate life, because we all require the dollars to survive nowadays. And it has to involve politics, because it is a political world we live in. The regeneration of our language and culture will give us the basis for the renewal of our people. One of the problems that we have had is we unfortunately divide up life into little segments. Some people think it's a housing problem here, or some people think it's an alcohol problem over here, or some people think it's a, you know, it's another problem over here, no electricity or something. But what happens to us as people happens to all of us. You know, not just a part of us. It's spiritual, it's physical, you know, it's economic. And unfortunately, our leadership have had to deal with only one element of that. That is the economic aspect. So there's a vast gap there that must be filled. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Willie Hensley's keynote address raises a number of questions. His message is complex. He said the land, the tribal soul, has an uneasy resting place in the hands of the corporations, a point we explore with Hensley on the next edition of Chinook. I'm Paula Schiller, and this has been a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
The land which represents our spiritual homeland now rests in a corporation, a soulless entity that is designed for commercial purposes. Unfortunately, our identity as a people, our tribal soul, has an uneasy resting place. That land.
Welcome to Chinook. I'm Paula Schiller. We brought back those words from Willie Hensley's keynote address to the 1980 AFN convention because he wanted to underscore a theme that emerged from several speeches and discussions. That is, that native lands in Alaska are still not all that secure under the terms of ANCSA. We'll be examining some perspectives on threats to land in the next few programs. During a break in convention business, Willie Hensley took a few moments to answer questions along those lines.
When you were talking about the spirit of the people being tied to the land and the land settlement being uneasy, you used the word uneasy. Can you tell me what you meant?
Well, yes. See, under a traditional Indian-type settlement, normally the Congress dealt with a tribe. And even though that particular group of Indians may have been removed from their traditional homeland, still the tribal government, tribal council, was responsible for the well-being of the people. That meant complete well-being from the standpoint of their identity, the spirit of their people, the language of their people, and its continuation. And of course, land is a kind of the key element of the survival of the people. It is the source of their, you know, their being. And what I say that the land has gotten kind of an uneasy location in a corporation, it's because the corporation, like I explained, is kind of like a soulless entity. You see, it's a commercial entity designed for commercial purposes. And until we understand that, then we won't know how to deal with the corporation, which we are all members of, right, in our various regions. So what I'm trying to say is that until we understand that that 100 shares of stock in our region, you know, represents our tribal soul, then there is substantial danger in the future that it will be gone if we see it only as a piece of paper, as a commercial item, see? You see what I'm driving at?
Well, I'm wondering if it's that you're saying in part that the corporations as they exist are not tied to the land as they should be, as closely as they should be.
Well, sure they're tied to the land, but you don't have to accept the corporation as it is traditionally accepted, as a commercial vehicle. You know, so what I'm trying to say to people is that, you know, to me, corporate activity, you know, is like a weapon. It's a weapon for survival, you know. I mean, it's a different type of institution that we have to use today to survive, you know, and but we have to understand it for what it is. It is not the end, you know. It is a way to try to help people. It gives us a base to work from, you know. But first, you know, it's a very complicated thing because you first have to understand who you are as a people. You know, you have to understand who you are and where you're going in a whole variety of arenas, you know. And I'm talking about identity and language and culture. I'm talking about economics. I'm talking about politics. And I'm talking about education. So you have to have very clear ideas in all those areas as to where you're going before you can properly apply your energy. whether it's corporate energy or political energy, you know, or mental energy. You see?
It's very complex what you're getting at. I'm not entirely sure I understand. Are you looking to responses from the corporation or from...
No, the corporation, it's only an element, you see. I mean, you see, when something happens to a person, an individual, if you get hit by a car, I mean, it happens to all of you, right? I mean, it happens to you physically, it happens to you psychologically, it happens to you economically if it's going to cost you something, you know? It might even affect your spirit, you know, if you're down. Well, so it's happened to our own people in terms of what the people have been through in the last century or more. You see, so you can't just deal with a segment of life, you know, if you're dealing with tribal groups. It's not very complex.
I guess the complex thing is how to tie all those things together when you're talking about spirit, land, education, identity.
Yes,
how do you tie those together?
Okay, but you see, to me, the key element in all of it is identity and spirit and language. Culture is important, but you see, culture changes. You know, culture is an outer reflection of who you are inside, you see. It's what you do in the physical world, you know. And that's always changing. You know, when we met up with the Indians and, you know, they had some way of living that was easier for us, we adopted it, right? We adopted the rifles, we adopted a lot of different things, you know. It didn't change who we are inside, right? But you see, what I'm saying is that culture is something that's that changes. You know, our Eskimo culture today is not what it was when I was a kid 25 years ago. It was not the same 25 years before that. It's not going to be the same 5 years from now. You see, and we cannot take a point in time and say, well, at this point you are Eskimo and at that point you are not, you see, or Indian, right? I mean, there's a lot of confusion over identity, you know, because for one thing, unfortunately, because of the pressures of our system, the changes that the people have gone through, there has been a kind of a discontinuity take place in the spirit of the people, the language as well, causing difficulty in communication within the same families, a kind of a disembodiment that takes place. You don't understand who you are or what you're doing here. And I think that is the main problem. It's not economics. Of course, living is a problem, you know, having enough to live on is a problem, but that's not the main problem, in my opinion. Politics is not the problem. You know, corporate life is not the problem. You know, it's a question of who we are. You know, we have to accept who we are, you know, and not limit ourselves. Because just as I said yesterday, if you are a good Athabascan, that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't be many other things, you see? And this is an inner conflict that our people have had for a long time, because if you got too good in education, then sometimes the people rejected that person. You know, they said, you're not one of us anymore, you see? So we have to eliminate these conflicts, which in my opinion keep us down, and to me, our potential, you know, is what we make it to be and what we perceive it to be. And I think we have great potential.
And you're saying that potential can be realized by best focusing in on that spirit, that rather than the outside things.
To me, the resolution of the question of identity, you know, and the retention of your tribal spirit has got to be the base to do everything else that we're trying to do.
I think I'm beginning to understand. Now, how closely or how inseparably is that spirit tied to the land? Because that's something that if, you know, land should go out of hands or the stock should be alienated, how crucial is that tie to the actual stock or the actual ground?
Every people have to have a place, you see, and that is why the Indian, especially the Indian people of the lower 48, they understand that if they don't have their land, it's going to be the disintegration of them as a people. So consequently, that is why they believe in that federal status, the trust status of the land, because they know it cannot be taken from them, you know, without their consent and without certain federal hoops to jump through. See, so that is their last bastion of hope for the retention of them as a species, as a people. And this is, of course, what I'm talking about up here. And I think, unfortunately, many of our leaders, as well as our own people, feel that the solution to our survival is out there somewhere, that somebody up there or out there is going to save us. But it is we, you know, that have to look into ourselves as individuals and as tribes, you know, to keep that spirit alive and the language alive, you know. At the same time, we have to survive today and in the future, you see. We have to change to survive. There's no question about that. But that doesn't have to mean that we change our being, you see. Have I confused you now?
It does a little bit, because in order to keep the land, to keep the stock, to keep the corporations have to be successful, and they have to be successful outside, and they have to relate to all these.
But you see, I think we can use Bering Straits as an example. You know, Charlie Johnson from Kawarak was up in Kotzebue when we had one of our retreats, and you know, it was very appropriate that he be there, because that area is, to me, an example of what it might be like if two of the three legs that we have to stand on are gone, right? I mean, if you have an economically poor region because their money has been lost, then that's one. Economic power is essential in America, you know, and then political power follows there after. So there you have sort of a political, economic, and political vacuum. So the people have had no choice but to look inward, you know, to their spirit and to their language and to their selves, you see, for a resurrection, you see. And so, you see, you can look at the settlement in many different ways. I mean, if your goal is the survival of your people, you know, then, you know, even if you didn't have any economics or politics, it's great because you have reached your goal, right? But if your goal is money and dividends and all that, that could, in effect, be helping to destroy who you are as a people, see? So it has to be a balance, and you have to know what you're doing, you see.
What can people do listening to you to ensure that they get that message through?
You see, they're not going to find the resolution to all this at a convention like this. You know, to me, it can be an expression of who you are. You know, it could be a way to focus on problem areas on a statewide basis. But the real solution has to be within their own communities, within their own person, within their own families, in their own tribe. That is where the focus has to be. You know, and I'm recommending in our Nana region that we see a lot of the, what I see has come out of a lot of years of just doing things, and in many ways not really understanding why I was involved in certain things. But in looking back, you know, it was like a knee-jerk reaction to try to survive and keep what we have, and that land fight was just one. But even though we came up with an imperfect instrument, that doesn't mean we shouldn't understand it, you see, but not be taken in by it. And in Nana, we've done some right things, I think, just by knee-jerk reaction. You know, we merged, for instance, all of our villages and the region, so that we have like a tribal corporation in a sense, because those little village corporations didn't have any potential hope of survival as an economic unit, you see. So we pooled it all together. We expanded our board. We have 23 people on the board. It's like a tribal council in effect. So consequently, when we meet, we just don't discuss economic matters. We discuss other matters of more substance, right, of concern to the people. And we've also made our annual meetings like a cultural event. I mean, it's all wrapped up. It's somewhat religious, it's somewhat cultural, it's somewhat business, and it's a kind of a renewal, you see. And it's an open affair. We don't try to keep it down to an hour and a half. We meet for, you know, a couple of days, you know. And so you don't have to try to run the corporation like General Motors. You know, it's basically represents our tribal homelands, and you know, we should do more with it than I think many of our regions are doing today.
Willie Hensley's view of the land settlement comes from years of personal involvement. Next week, a Navajo, the chairman of the Council of Energy Resource Tribes, talks about external threats to native lands. I'm Paula Schiller, and you've been listening to Chinook, a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.